Hey everyone, welcome to Smash Trivia. I'm your host, Smash Trivia John. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram by searching Smash Trivia to follow everything happening with me. I'll be the one with a big old green head in the profile picture, so excited to get into this. This is the Gamma Analysis. Basically, in this series, I'm going to review everything Hulk, all the movies, TV shows, and I also do random other geeky films. Occasionally not so geeky ones too, and I also like to mix things up once in a while by not reviewing anything. Hope you enjoy Smash Trivia Presents The Gamma Analysis. I want to ask everyone listening, if they can please do sign for me, please share the hell of this podcast with all your friends. If you don't, Hulk will be angry. Now that we have all of that important stuff out of the way, let's smash right into this episode. Hello, my Gamma friends. I'm joined by Keith. How you doing, Keith?
I'm doing great, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great, too. This is the 100th episode of the Gamma Analysis. Thank you all so much for joining me along the way. And this has been quite an awesome journey. Thank you as well to particularly people who've come on the podcast, Keith for Eighth for doing a lot for the podcast. I will always appreciate everything that you do. And this has been amazing trip, and I'm very happy to be able to call you my friend.
I 100%. Agree and reciprocate, my friend. I love the appreciation that you've given me for Hulk, and also just a regular like way to kind of relax, watch something older fashioned, and really pick it apart and realize how many people out there love the Hulk and can relate to him. So it's so much fun recording. I love it. Yeah.
For this 100th episode, we're gonna be talking about both our favorite Hulk moments, and we're going to be reacting to yours. So we're going to start off with reacting to yours. I'm going to go on to the email that I have set up for this. The first one on the email that we got was from someone named MediaFan50 on YouTube. They said, "Hey, Smash Trivia John, it's MediaFed50. That's my YouTube name. My favorite Hulk moment comes from the 2003 film where Hulk goes up against the gamma infused dogs to kill Benny by his father. That's a great moment, man. And I love that moment.
We may have something in common, MediaFan50. That's amazing. Great choice. Yeah.
And then next we have a video submission from my I'll save all of the recordings for a bit so we can have the shared screen all at the same time. We next then have my friend Lindsay on Twitter. She's at Zeglerverse. She said, "Congrats on 100 episodes of Smash Trivia. I'm very honored to have joined you for a couple of episodes and hope to do so again in the future. Thanks for always being someone I can laugh with and appreciate the Hulk universe with. You're a great friend. All the best, Lindsay." Thank you so much, Lindsay. I really appreciate that. We have also a couple from Discord that we're in. Whitney from the Going Merry podcast said, "Just his whole demeanor on Sakaar, him calling Thor names and arguing about who won versus who and who's the strongest, as she said, she loves that personality." Which I absolutely agree. Favorite moment of mine as well. Everything with Sakaar.
It was that movie. It was like they took everyone's favorite thing from Hulk and Thor in the first Avengers movie, them on the back of that giant, I don't know what you call it, the Chitauri worm thing, crashing through Grand Central Station and just punching Thor and punching him off the, he knows he can't hurt Thor, not fully, not forever. He knows that they have a bit of a rivalry, and then it just spawns on 3, 4, 10 movies down the line in Ragnarok, where you get to see these two characters interact, embodying that scene, that moment in a whole movie. It was awesome.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, something I think a lot of people don't seem to realize with Hulk that I think it's an important thing to bring up is when he's fighting people who he knows they're not evil, he's not using all of his strength on them. He probably could have easily defeated Thor if he wanted to in Ragnarok, yeah. but he would have chosen not to, because he doesn't want to actually hurt him even though he may be annoyed at him and all the rest of the Avengers, he still knows they aren't bad people.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you kind of wish that you could see the Hulk separate from Bruce Banner explore more with the Avengers in the MCU, and I hope they do go back to separating them in that way, because the Hulk would have a very different opinion about people like Thor or Cap, who can take a punch and dole it out, and not, you know, if he were to punch Tony Stark unarmored, he would tap him. He would barely touch him because he knows that he could kill him. But Thor, he respects him because he could take a wallop.
So how I always saw what was going on with Ragnarok is so he left because he was annoyed at them because they only have him come out to be used as a tool. And I think the way to fix that would have been having that he would have come out to hang out as well. Mm-hmm. And like when the Avengers are having a hangout together, like when they're on when they're at the Avengers Tower, like Tony should have set up a way for Hulk to be able to come out and enjoy himself too, and not just be that Hulk is used as a tool by them. And I think that's what angered Hulk so much, that he's just being used as a tool.
It's fair, and I think that the way that they characterize him really well in comic books and really well in like the old TV series is that he is an entity that is equal to Banner, deserves just as much respect and acknowledgement, rather than the way that the Avengers seem to treat him in the MCU, where he's just got a superpower and otherwise it's Bruce that's in charge. And it's like, no, you could probably do more to treat them balanced. The same way, like in Moon Knight, the way that Mark and Steven have to kind of start sharing the body. Like, they need to share the body. It's just unfortunately that the Hulk, when the Hulk has control of the body, he needs a much bigger chair. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I think Tony can account for those things. He can make sure that there's a really indestructible big chair in the room so they can all hang out.
I would hope so with how much money Tony Stark has.
Just make a chair, have Veronica transform into a chair sometimes. That would be perfect. There you go.
Oh. Red's on fire said I had both the puny god scene from Avengers, which is also one of my favorites, and then Ragnarok as a whole. You can definitely agree with that. Isaiah the Incredible said Age of Ultron, when he looks at the carnage, at all the carnage and destruction he wrought, and turns back to Banner. They really need to explore that. Hulk destroys his entire cities in his anger, and he just gets to join the Avengers and be heralded a hero. I think that's an interesting thing, but I think he's really only doing actually destroying whole cities in that one point in Age of Ultron, where the Hulk isn't actually there. It is just pure rage because of what Wanda did to him. I don't think he can be blamed for that.
Yeah, the witch put a spell on Hulk, and it never shows us what they make Hulk see, which I thought was very interesting, because you're set up with all this power and illusion that you can show Thor, Cap, who else, Nat, they all are shown something that you couldn't fathom what is what emotion is going to come out of that. So I would have loved to have seen if there was a deleted scene or if there was some flashback to what Wanda showed Hulk. That would have been cool because I can only imagine it put him in an absolute trauma state where he was just pure rage. And you could see it in his eyes.
I would definitely have loved to see something like that, but I don't think that he should be blamed for what he did there because he wasn't in control. He wasn't that wasn't just who Hulk is. He doesn't destroy.
Every superhero has to have at some point the consideration of what happens if they were controlled to do evil. Yeah. And this was the first one that Ultron thought to use to fuck with them. And to be honest, Loki did the same thing. Hulk is unfortunately an easy target. That's why he leaves, because he knows that he's more of a burden. He could be used against his friends, and that finishing battle in Age of Ultron is the one last chance for him to try and do right before he has decided already to go and get away from the people he loves.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then finally, for the last one from Discord, we have is have Jared, the Marvelous Minister, who said Hulk punching Thor in the Avengers, which yes, that's a great moment, and the big monster are seen in Thor Ragnarok. I love that scene too. And he said, I remember watching through the animated Avengers show, and there's an episode where Hulk is being pouty. Tony walks in and asks, how's the Incredible Sulk? Made my dad, who just happened to be in the room with me at the time, crack up.
Yeah,
that's really nice. Awesome. Nice, man.
That is very cool. Yeah. It makes me wonder if Jared's dad was into any kind of comic books growing up, or what his general knowledge of the Marvel universe is, because it's been around for so long. I wouldn't be surprised if he had his favorites too, and even just from a distance, you know. Yeah,
no, definitely. Cool. It kind of really surprised me whenever it came up growing up is so my dad he didn't like superheroes much stuff. He thought they were just for kids, and but there were a few times where I noticed he definitely had more of an appreciation for it than he let out, as one time I saw he was literally alone in a room and he was watching X-Men Origins Wolverine on TV.
Everyone's going to start somewhere, even if it is the worst Wolverine.
He also after Stan Lee died, he showed some appreciation towards when I would bring it up, which really surprised me, they even knew who Stan Lee was. And also, and this was a really biggest one, is whenever there was a Spider-Man film coming out, he wanted to see that. Liked Spider-Man. He didn't, but which was favorite. Which it always surprised me because he definitely did not seem like someone who enjoyed superheroes at all, and he made it clear that he didn't like superhero stuff because it was for kids. But those particular things, every once in a while showed appreciation towards.
I feel like, and this, I have no knowledge of your dad except for what you've told me, but I feel like my dad was a little bit similar to yours in some ways, and I feel like sometimes, especially parents from a certain generation, they feel as though they have to be hard-headed when it comes to the ideas out there that could make their kids into dreamers, because they think of like the whole like head up in the clouds, oh, my kid's not gonna put their nose to the grindstone and like work hard on something, they're just going to be up in the clouds thinking and dreaming and all these imaginative things, and it's like those people aren't, they don't make it in this world or whatever. It's like that is an old concept. And it's thankfully with the beauty and the magic that is the internet, it has become an old concept. But I think an older generation would kind of almost quickly cancel their own predilections for things like that, like superheroes, and say, oh, it's just for kids. And really what they wish they could say is that it's okay to like both, or it's okay to like this stuff and be a contributing adult. I just don't know what that world is because they've never lived it. They've never understood it. But I think that it is a common thing with older generations to want to kind of squash that in their children so that they don't end up with their heads in the clouds making the same mistakes I made or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, they just worry too much.
All right. Imagination
can be applied to hard work as well.
I'm going to share my screen so I can listen to the two messages that I got. Let me know if you can hear this.
Okay.
John, it's Clayton from Men Who Like.
Can you hear that?
I can indeed.
So this is
Clayton.
Yeah, Clayton from the Men Who Like Movies podcast. Good friend of mine. They're a great podcast, so definitely check them out. All right, let's start this.
Men Who Like Movies. Wow. 100 episodes. We have our 100th episode in a week from recording this. So woo-hoo! Congratulations to us. That's a huge accomplishment. I love coming on for all of the weird movies you can think of for us to cover, even if I don't love the movie. It's always a fun time. And I do have a favorite Hulk moment. It's the "that's my secret, I'm always angry" moment. Say that a lot when I'm thinking of, I usually use it with depression. They're like, "that's my secret, I'm always depressed." And also just literally everything in Thor Ragnarok. But congrats on 100 episodes. Here's to 100 more.
Thank you so much, Clayton. I really appreciate that. Those are some absolutely great moments. I love having you on. Congrats on you guys' 100th episodes as well. It's a beautiful thing to be able to get to 100 episodes.
It's a big fucking what do they call it? Milestone. Say stepping stone. Milestone. Thank you. I was gonna say landmark, and I was like, that's not right. Anyways, milestone.
And now we got the other one we have. Is from Nico from Pop Incursions.
Ooh.
Hey, congratulations for the 100th. Episode. It's Nico from Pop Incursions. My favorite Hulk moments include Hulk when he was fighting Fenris at the end of Thor Ragnarok, Hela's big wolf, and She-Hulk. Yes. Well, I love everything about She-Hulk, but my favorite She-Hulk moment is when she's fighting with Daredevil, or when she's just fighting in general, like when she was fighting with Wong against those demons, or when she's breaking into Marvel Studios and gets to Kevin.
I love all those things too. Nico, thank you so much for that ad clip. I really appreciate it. And everyone,
that's awesome,
check out
Nico. Thank you.
Check out Pop Incursions on YouTube. By the time that this comes out, you'll have there will have been a video with me on there, joining Nico. Oh, and also a couple weeks before this comes out as well on my podcast, there will be an episode where he joined me for talking about the Fantastic Four or films from the 2000s, yeah, which was a really fun time.
It would be.
All right, that was great. Thank you to everyone who sent in thoughts. Check out all these people and their channels and podcasts. They're awesome people. And I bet you'll enjoy their content.
Can I ask, you said Lindsay Zeglerverse.
Yes, Zeglerverse is the name of her Twitter account.
What was her favorite Hulk one? Because I feel like I totally missed
she
it.
Didn't,
and I...
Let me see.
Did she give a nice message, but she didn't?
Yeah, she just gave a nice message.
Okay, Thank you. No. Thank you, Lindsay. I felt I was worried. I was like, oh shit. I feel like I totally missed what her favorite Hulk thing was, but no, it's because she okay, cool.
All right. Let's get into our favorite Hulk moments. I'll start with one, and then you can give me one, and we can just go back and forth if you'd like.
So start off for me, I
had to go with his Hulk's comic origin and in the 60s. It's actually really cool origin in the origin and looking at it as this like. I don't think many superheroes' origins are very specifically tied to a time period in the way that that Hawks is. Yeah. And it very much saddens me that we haven't been able to see Cyan like that in live action, because of the fact that they want to be able to make it so that Hawk could be in present day. Having him and the Gamma Bomb and saving Rick Jones in the 60s during the Cold War. It's such a fun time. I'm to read. Yeah.
It's those things where time period piece meets adventure and excitement and sci-fi, and the two mesh together perfectly. Like Back to the Future wouldn't be Back to the Future if it didn't take place in the era that it did, or the days and years that it did. You know, Indiana Jones, same thing. Like, there's just a connection to what was going on in the world at the time that makes it so special. So I 100% agree. A lot of comic books are like that, but I feel like Hulk has a very good tether specifically to the fact that it was the gamma radiation. That's something that we don't see since.
I also not just like actually that like the specific origin, but I also really just want a film that gives off the tone that those original comics gave off, because there's such a specific like, I don't want to say campy, but there's like there's a specific tone to it that's unlike anything we get again present day that really fits with the fact that it was a comic that came out in the 60s, and I want to see sign of it if it's I'm really hoping the fact that they gave that 60s style to the teaser poster for Fantastic Four, I'm hoping that means that we might be getting a tone like that in the film. Yeah. Which would be so much fun.
It'd be so different, and they need to start thinking outside the bun, not to quote Taco Bell or anything, but they really do need to start thinking about how to make things different. When we saw Eternals and how different that was, I feel like they should be running in various directions instead of trying to make things identical or fit a certain mold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Even the fences, man. More creativity, the better.
So what is your first one?
Okay. So I divided mine up into 5 funniest moments and 5 serious moments. So I'll just go through my funniest ones first. So my number 5 comes from the 2003 Hulk movie, the dog fight. So me and Media Fan 50 are in agreement that whole thing, the fact that he's fighting hulked out dogs is so funny. I think there's like a bull mastiff, there's a poodle,
there's a Rottweiler. So if I remember right, from when I did the review for that, I think those like were all like designed by Ang Lee's son. His son like drew things, and he was like, I'm gonna make that into a real thing with the film, and that's I think that's really cool. And and it's also a particular moment within that that fight that I remember laughing so hard about. It's the fact that he hits one of the Hulk dogs in the dick.
I'm sure that was the sound that was made. Yeah. No, that like just the imagination behind that. We haven't seen that since. I'm sure there's reasons behind like animal cruelty or some shit like that. No. But applying the Hulk serum or the Hulk, you know, Hulkification to a beast to show that it is something that transforms, instead of having him fight demons or fight aliens or fight whatever, that's cool too. But to have him fight something that directly correlates with, oh, you took a human or a earth thing and made it Hulkified, now deal with these three dogs. Just like, good luck. Like, it's just, that was so cool to me that that did that. And this is, we're talking about a director that made Brokeback Mountain and Life of Pi afterwards. Like, it's so, he is such an odd duck, and I love Ang Lee for that reason.
That was awesome. So next one that I put is Hulk and She-Hulk training in She-Hulk episode one. As I've said many times, like, that is my favorite version of Hulk that we've gotten. Like, I just love how he is, his attitude in that first episode of She-Hulk is, and also the dynamic between him and She-Hulk is this perfect sibling like dynamic that is so much fun. I actually got really annoyed about this a few weeks ago, because I was watching this video that was talking about how Mark Ruffalo had apparently at like some convention or something said he wants to see Hulk versus his Wolverine, and the YouTuber that was making the video was like oh, Hulk has been weak recently, and they have he somehow got defeated by She-Hulk. I'm like, no, you fundamentally misunderstood the scene if you think that he was defeated by She-Hulk. He
100%.
He was holding back. It's like
you saying earlier, him pulling his punches and holding back with people he doesn't want to hurt. Obviously, he's not going to kill his cousin.
I understand you hate She-Hulk, but it's just because you hate her does not mean that that Hulk should just try and kill her. That would be the most out of character thing he could possibly do. It's his cousin. He doesn't want to hurt her.
Yeah, he's trying to teach her a hard knocks life kind of lesson. He's trying to tell her that it's not so easy being crazy. A Hulk. Her journey is very different from his, but it doesn't mean that he's not trying to impart some wisdom on her. Yeah,
it's crazy to me that there people are still insisting on trying to complain about the She-Hulk show and get mad at it this much time later.
Like, oh my god! The amount like of people it, I've seen change their mind about it. So many. I saw it was a. There was a MCU group on Facebook that I look at sometimes, and somebody asked, they said that just flat out that, you know, She-Hulk wasn't that bad. I don't know what everybody's problem was. And they mostly got positive comments and reactions, and I had to agree with them. I was like, yeah, it got way too much hate. Not great marketing, showing Daredevil too soon.
You know, if you don't like the show, if you don't like the show, that's fine. But if your criticisms of it sound the same as bigots' criticisms, then no, your criticisms are not good, and you're just hating on it. And also, if you don't like the show, you should stop talking about it 2 years later. Like, seriously,
don't watch. It's fine.
Why are you insisting on shitting on it 2 years later?
The MCU, it needs to be tonally diverse, the same way that it's been, like, just diverse. Like, they're yes, they are trying to look outward from the, you know, typical white guy demographic and make sure to give everybody relatability and see and show them superheroes that are every color and every creed and every person out there. So that's great, but also tonally they're different. Mm-hmm. And the She-Hulk comedy law sitcom is not a bad idea. It's a fun idea, and it was just poorly marketed. Again, don't show that Daredevil's going to be in it at all. Make that a surprise. Make that fun and spend more time talking about the parts of the show that don't involve him and put that in the trailer. It was really a silly thing, especially when they saved him for like episode 8. It's like, oh, you're just going to piss him off now more. It's like, why would you do that? It still drives me nuts to this day. It's like you're only showing how insecure you are with the product you've made by saying, oh, we have to show them that Daredevil is in episode 8, or we have to show them that Daredevil might be in it, so you have to pay attention each week. It's like right before you even released the first episode, because now everyone's looking for Daredevil and they're not paying attention to a brand new character being introduced for the first time that we need to invite into our hearts. Instead, you've got a bunch of people who are already putting up a wall and they're going, well, where was Daredevil? But it's like, shut up. Like, that's just, and the marketing team has nothing to do with the directors and writers of the show. That's why I shit on them so much. And
they also, you know, these people who are complaining every week about there's Daredevil. Like they particularly got even more when they teased his helmet. And it's like that. Have you never seen a show tease someone's tease something for saying and not just be immediately the next episode that you see it?
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty normal thing to happen. Teasing sign does not mean it has to happen immediately.
Honestly, on the Avengers right now, we're watching the Daredevil series, and if I should tease the next episode of Daredevil by showing She-Hulk and say, oh, we're going to get to it soon, but you don't know when, and just confuse the shit out of people and see how it goes in the opposite foot. We'll see.
So what's your next moment?
Okay, so in my top 5 funny moments, I have Hulk bangs his head on the roof of a cave and then has a tantrum in 2008 Hulk when he's alone with Betty. And they are just hanging out in a thunderstorm, and then he he tries to sit down next to her, and then he's too tall for the little awning that they're sitting under, and he bangs his head, and then he screams about it into the thunder and lightning, and it's so funny. It was like a King Kong moment that I really appreciated. I might be conflating the two. I hope I'm not, because I think that does happen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it happens though.
Okay, because that was just so funny to me, just seeing. Because when you bang your head or you stub your toe, you know you're going to Hulk out. That is the moment I would Hulk out if I had Hulks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a good moment. It's hilarious. Oh, for my next moment, I have, again, another one from the comics, and particularly Hulk's first run. I love that General Ross made a Hulk-shaped missile to send at Hulk. Like, why
give me that shape? Why would the shape matter?
I'm pretty sure they wanted to confuse him as it came towards him.
So it was like Hulk shaped in the front. So as it was coming,
it looks just like Hulk.
That's so confusing. So there's no aerodynamics in play at all. It is just a Hulk shaped thing. Rocket propelled toward Hulk.
Oh yeah,
insane. That's amazing at the same time.
Let me see if I can find this in the clip or the picture from the comic. So if I don't know if you'll be able to see this as well, but that is the Hulk missile,
arms out, just like.
That's it. It's so literally just shaped like Hulk, and it's like
that's incredible.
That's the kind of ridiculous thing from the early kind of Hulk comics that really makes me want to see a direct adaptation of those into live action, because I think it would make for such a fun time.
Oh, they would never. Disney would never allow the U.S. military to seem so stupid. That'll never happen. Sadly. They're willing to make cops look dumb, but when it comes to the U.S. military, that shit is airtight. That's the whole reason Rhodey exists, is to make sure the military stays on point. My number three
is
for funny anyway, funny Hulk moments is the very orange looking unpainted foot underneath Lou Ferrigno. And I want to say it's season one in the earthquake episode.
Might have been.
He finally bursts out of the building and he like runs for the hills, and you see like 2 seconds of the fact that they did not paint Lou Ferrigno's foot. And it's just, that to me was a great moment for the podcast. It was a great moment for watching the series. Just a silly thing that decades after the fact, you know, there's some makeup artist that is going, I really hope they don't keep talking about this in 2023. It's like, oh no. Sorry, now it's 2024. We're still doing it. Yeah.
Oh, that's great moment. If I remember right, that was like one where it wasn't even on IMDb or signed. It was a revealing moment. I just saw it in the episode or saw it, if I remember right. It was just like, wow.
You pointed it out, and I think we zoomed in on it on TikTok or something. Mm-hmm. But my God, it's things like that that make me enjoy the fact that they just painted a bodybuilder green. And they did their best. God. And but you know what? The 60s and 70s, they're about swinging for the fences like that. When you're doing sci-fi that long ago, it's just nice to see, because that shit is so much easier to do now. And it's like, you guys were trying back then to make things that were that imaginative. And you didn't even have all the bells and whistles that we have today. It's so endearing. I love it.
Next, my next one is Puny God from Avengers. It's such a great moment.
And it's very comic book accurate, right? Like that's a great thing to see in the first Avengers movie, and the only time that you hear Hulk speak. Beyond, like, he doesn't say much in Age of Ultron, I don't think, but he talks a lot in Ragnarok, and he's suspiciously been there a while, so it's like time works differently, he's learned to speak, but that's the only time he speaks in Avengers, and it is very special. I agree. My next one is the tooth spit in Age of Ultron when Tony's like kind of like embarrassed that he's done this, even though he's objectively trying to knock him out, knock out the Hulk, and he can't. Like, he just looks so scared when Hulk looks at him and spits the tooth out.
I think he said like, "I'm sorry."
It's good improv. Like, you know that Robert Downey Jr. was sitting in some kind of CG kind of camera surrounded helmet for that, the whole acting of that scene, and he acted the shit out of it. And it's just, it's a great, that interaction felt so real between a fully CG character that was mocapped by Mark Ruffalo and the very out of his element Robert Downey Jr. sitting in some CG screen fixture, and yet that felt like they were both present in the moment and actually interacting with each other. That's a great fight.
So my next one on is when Cap tells Hawk to smash in the Avengers. I love this scene so much, because it's not only does it just really play well, but also it's I love it, because it's for the first time somebody telling Hulk, hey, I want you to do the thing that you like doing, the thing that you're good at, and he's never gotten a chance to be told that before, just the smile that Hulk gets when he's told that is just like, I love that so much.
Oh, it was very, very clever. And it's you don't see a lot of interaction with Cap and Hulk beyond that. There's not a lot of moments, except maybe an Endgame when you're having Professor Hulk or trying to get the time machine working and stuff like that. That is a beautiful moment. And it's from a leader who's brand new at leading, and a Hulk who's never been validated more in his life. It was just really cool. Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. My last of my five funny moments with the Hulk is the scream Hulk lets out at the end of Avengers. When he wakes up Tony by screaming, it is so funny to me that it's like that's his experience, that's his go-to thing to do when Tony isn't responsive and has just come crashing down from the wormhole. And it's like it's like last ditch effort is to just yell really loud and then Tony's fine. It's really fun. I love that. And Robert Downey Jr.'s reaction to it couldn't have been better. It was perfect. Yeah,
I love that moment as well. It's really funny, and also just as you know, I love the idea of Hulk not just being the punchy punchy, but actually saving people. That's one of the only times in the MCU that you actually get to see that happen. And that's so I really appreciate that moment. I love it so much.
It's true. And they set up the, you know, Bruce and Tony having this science bros kind of relationship where they both speak a language no one else can really understand and stuff. But to see that that does translate over to, you know, Hulk having Bruce's memories and understanding that, okay, this guy means a little bit more to us because you have a good relationship with him. I'll save him. I'll respect him. And then I'll mourn if he were to have died, and to scream to wake him up so he, you know, he's okay is really funny. That was great.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, something that I've wondered about with that scene is so, if someone's not is not breathing like that, they might use defibrillators to try and wake them up, and it makes and it's always made me wonder, could have they been trying to say that the vibrations that were caused by Hulk screaming is what actually was enough to wake him up, or was it just the loudness?
Well, I think so. I think it's like that's the scream, same as everything Hulk does, is the loudest, is the biggest, is the baddest. His clap, you know, alone does stuff that other people's doesn't. So yeah, I think that his scream is like the only one that could do it, and it wasn't just that it was loud, it was everything.
Because I think that it shows like the effort that they put into the scene if it actually was supposed to be that the vibrations it's just like a defibrillator is what did it, giving accuracy to real life, I think it's a really cool thing for that scene.
Agreed.
My next one is Smart Hulk giving Scott a taco. I love that scene so much, just because there's not a lot of soft Hulk moments in the MCU, but we had that one, and I love just getting these a soft Hulk moment where he's just being caring and nice to someone,
and he's very saintly, he's very Buddhist. And it's like that's what Bruce had to find in order to combine the two successfully, at least for a time, was to be the most charming and charismatic and thoughtful and relaxed guy, where he's like, oh, I don't need this taco that yours just got ruined. Let's give you a new one. And he's just a good guy. He's just a sweetheart. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We all know Mark Ruffalo is. So, yeah. It's a really easy transition to as much as people were up in arms that Professor Hulk even existed, it was really silly. That is a great version of him that you wouldn't have gotten from either.
It's so weird to me that people who hate it so much, because it's like, do you not like character development and arcs? Because that's
funny.
Because if you just keep him as the exact same Savage Hulk the entire MCU, he doesn't actually then have a story. He isn't actually going anywhere then and changing and evolving.
And it's one of those things where it doesn't translate. Like hundreds, if not thousands of comic books slowly showing character development over time. Compared to what Hollywood has to pump out, it's very expensive to imagine. You think about comic book actors, is there aren't any. They're drawn. So you have actors that can only play the character for so long. You need to cover the time and space and the character development that has to happen in a shorter span of time. And you need to tell the stories that people are interested in. So it's silly to me when people are like, oh, we haven't had enough of regular Hulk. I miss regular Hulk. I miss the one where he's raging. And it's like, they only have so many movies to show that guy in. Let's show some character growth. Let's speed it up a bit. I know it's sped up for you, but maybe we can go back to some other Hulk later. But right now, it's like, let's just try this. And to the idea that it's so wrong to try things is very stupid and very stunted, in my opinion.
So what is your next one?
So now we're into my serious ones. And one of my number five for my top five serious Hulk moments is the battle against Hulk and in Age of Ultron, where Tony's got Veronica armor on. I love everything about this. It's a big moment to call it just a moment. It was so cool. Showing Hulk being dangerous to people, but engaged enough in the fight that he didn't actually end up hurting anyone, thank God. And also just the amount of laughs that you get from that fight of just Tony interacting with, okay, this is an unbeatable foe. I have the armor for it. Is it enough? Like, you helped me design this armor. Like, there's just many moments in that fight that are so... it's just fantastic. It's a very underrated Avengers film, I feel.
Oh yeah, it's
people don't list it there. If you were to say, what are your favorite Avengers movies, there's been four. People, I feel, probably always put that one at the bottom,
and I would probably put it at the bottom myself, but that doesn't mean it's bad. Like, I love all of the Avengers films. That one I may like the least, but I love all of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that one for me comes slightly higher than Endgame. But if I were to list them in order, I'd say my favorite is Infinity War, and then the original Avengers, and then Age of Ultron, and then Endgame. Not that any one of them are bad. They're all the best things that the MCU's come out with, or some of the best things. They're all in my top 10. For the MCU. That's the order I would put them in.
Makes sense. All right. So my next one is Thor and Hulk's fight in Thor Ragnarok in the Colosseum. It's so good, and it's so comic booky feels like.
Yeah.
So it's such a great moment.
It's a reveal that I understand why they put it in the trailer to show that Hulk was in this. Like, obviously the Hulk is in it so much that it'd be hard to market the movie without showing him. But it's one of those surprises that if that surprise had happened for me in the theater, it would have been like 20 times, 50 times more exciting than when you see it in the trailer. The trailer was very effective. It got people in the seats. It got people to put more faith into the Thor movies. And it got people to go see it. But I don't know. There's something about a trailer that reveals too much and some surprises. I always like to wonder, you know, what if that my first time ever seeing Hulk was in this movie happened in the theater?
I think it would be really cool, but I don't know how they would do it because of the fact that subversive if trailers can piss some people off, and also there's not a lot of like subversive films and elements in Marvel, but it'd be cool if Marvel ever tried doing something with the trailer like The Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Where they made it seem like it was a completely different film in the trailer, and then you go see it and you get completely surprised by it.
There's some great movies like that, and some real, like, I feel like B movies and lower rated horror movies especially, I find, have done a great job of setting up ideas that later bigger budget movies use. Like, there is a great, great surprise from a movie called From Dusk Till Dawn. Have you ever seen that?
I have not seen it, but I've heard people say that I would probably enjoy it.
It is so silly. I would review that with you. Please tell me when you're ready. Maybe it'd be next October because it is a horror movie, but if you know so little about it, I hope you never look up more. I would love to review that one with you, and I won't say anything
else about the only thing I really know about it is Selma Hayek as a vampire.
Damn it! No, that's pretty good, actually. I would still review it with you, even though you know that. Selma Hayek in one of her coolest roles, but very short role. But George Clooney's fantastic in it. He's a blast. He's very funny. And Tarantino plays a pretty big part as well.
Which is weird because I feel like he's not really an actor, but okay.
He helped write the script, but he didn't direct it. Robert Rodriguez directed it. Mm-hmm. So Tarantino being there, I think the two of them are close enough that he probably helped co-write it with Robert to make it better each day, because he would probably improvise some lines and stuff like that. But yeah, it is weird. It is weird to see him in such a large role, because he's not a great actor. He's not great. But he plays the part that he's given very well. I'm not going to say anything else about it. But yeah, as far as twists and subverted expectations, I think that some of the best movies in the world can market their movie and then still pull that off.
Right. So what is your next moment?
So my next moment, and it's not everybody's cup of tea, is the relationship between Nat and Bruce that never became of it. But I think for the purposes of Age of Ultron, it really lent itself to hone back in our understanding of how Bruce sees himself and how Nat sees herself. So it was good character development from both of them. But when she pushes him, she kisses him and then pushes him off the thing, and he has to turn into the Hulk, because she knows he's going to. But that was like a great way to say, like, our trauma doesn't matter. We have to save the world now.
No, it's not. It's definitely not one of my favorite relationships, but I do think it is decent, and it did create some pretty emotional and beautiful scenes. And both actually in Age of Ultron and after that, with things like her being what causes is Hulk turn back into Banner in Thor Ragnarok, and the in Endgame having him get emotional after her death. If they hadn't had that relationship in there, they wouldn't have had any much of characters where they actually felt like they were really close to her to be able to have a strong reaction after her death, which I think it really helped their mourning scene for her, having he cared so much and he threw that chair into the water.
Yeah. I was impressed when that moment happened in Endgame and how many people in that scene of the original six she really had a connection with, because over the time you've seen Black Widow, she really basically everybody but Thor, and Thor, you know, it's not as though he didn't care about her, he gives a shit about everybody on that team, but she had a connection with everyone else. Like, if it wasn't for Tony, she wouldn't have probably gotten as involved. He felt very responsible for her because of the fact that she slunk right under his radar back in Iron Man 2 and then helped him take down Justin Hammer. With Clint, obviously she has a huge history with him. With Steve, she was a partner to him in a lot of ways, and maybe never a potential love interest, but at the very least he was more appreciative of her as a friend than I think he had gotten in a long time. So he was, it was a nice to see many complex and very different relationships with Nat. And the fact that they had had that short maybe will they won't they thing in Age of Ultron, I thought added a complexity that happens with people in real life. Like sometimes people don't end up together, but they nearly do, and they come close, and then there's always that kind of bond after that. Like the will they won't they turns into maybe the one who got away, but also maybe just they understood each other better than future partners, you know. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. My next moment is when the is another one of the a soft Hulk moment. It's the 70s Hulk simply opening a soda, like it was like that. It was so cute to me. It's weird because that that came from one of the worst episodes of the series.
Is that the NASCAR one?
Yeah.
Ricky episode. So. Yeah. The Ricky. Yeah. I was trying to remember his name. It was like Roddy.
Yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed that moment and. It like little things like that give Hulk humanity, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because Bruce gets to sip all the sodas doesn't mean that Hulk gets to enjoy them. So it's nice to see Hulk getting to enjoy his own beverage. Yeah. Mine is actually all my next one is also from the 70s Hulk show. Okay. It's just the scene in the pilot where Dr. Beautiful Elena Marks is trying to calm him down in the lab and able to talk to him. And it was just, a beautiful moment between a character that I think maybe should have been his wife. And just him, you know, in the first version of Hulk, can he be reasoned with? Can he understand what people are saying to him and the purpose that they the importance that they play in Bruce's life? Does he get through to Hulk or no? And I think that her kind of calming him down and getting him to listen to reason for a little bit even showed that. So his first save as well, because he tries to save her from the fire. I don't think he doesn't succeed, I don't think, in the end, but
yeah.
Obviously she dies, I know that, believe me, it's been haunting me ever since, but
yeah. It's definitely some really great moments with her in that pilot and it's honestly such a great pilot episode. And like, even though I enjoy the premise of different locations every time with Hulk, there's a part of me that does wish that the entire show felt like that pilot, because that pilot really felt like Hulk, and the Hulk, and not everything since then feels quite like a comic book show, actually.
Yeah, you know, much like Hulk, that pilot was strong, and I agree that should be their metric. They should be trying to get back to that as the show progresses, you know, to give us some variety as well, but don't forget where the roots are. And that pilot was awesome. That could have been a Hulk movie for sure.
Well, I mean, in some countries it was.
There you go.
Yeah. Like, there was a lot of episodes, a lot of like two part episodes and stuff, but off with the 70s Hulk TV show where in some countries they released in theaters as films. And also, that original pilot actually was a TV film, I'm pretty sure.
Right. That makes sense. I remember you saying that. And the fact that I think, what is there, four films or four TV movies that have been made off of the show after the show ended?
Yeah, so there's been, there were three after it ended. I believe it was The Incredible Hulk Returns, Trial of the Incredible Hulk, and Death of the Incredible Hulk. Which, though it'll take us a long time before we get to those, it'll be very interesting if we ever do get to those, because I know that I think it was Incredible Hulk Returns has Thor in it, and Trial of the Incredible Hulk has Matt Murdock.
Ooh, shit. Okay, well, we have to get to them, but I am so in.
So, My next moment is one that I think is a emotional moment that I think it doesn't get enough recognition, and that is the Earth Doesn't Want Hulk speech in Thor Ragnarok, because that's such a powerful moment, him being like, they don't want me. And I think there's a lot of people who feel that that in real life, and that's so it's I think it was a really beautiful moment, and having Thor try to comfort him and be like, no, we do want you. You're a friend. And I think that was very important.
Yeah, and to come from a place of easy acceptance from Thor, of all people, like he's made friends with and seen aliens across the galaxy that are a bigger problem than Hulk is and still have a heart of gold. And like, so of course he'd be such an easy backup for him and to bolster him in the right direction and support him. It is a great dynamic. I love the two of them together, honestly.
All right.
My next one is Professor Hulk stepping up and doing the snap that brought everyone back. Don't get me wrong, Tony's snap at the end of Endgame is obviously a one that's very necessary, and one that does solve the huge problem of Thanos. But the goal from the get-go was to make sure everyone comes back. And I feel like sometimes it does get kind of ignored, the fact that Hulk
Oh yeah.
knew that he could handle this amount of radiation, and he does the deed, and he kind of loses his arm for some time,
Oh yeah,
to be fully functional.
it's a really beautiful moment, and like and having like other Avengers like Thor try to stop him from doing it, but because they don't want something bad to him is really great. Oh
And
yeah.
Thor too, it came from a both a and you know, this is a harsh truth, but depression to me has it does unintentionally create a higher level of selfishness. And to Thor, him trying to stop him was just as much about not wanting to see anything bad happen to his friend, to also wanting so badly to redeem himself for the amount of things and failures that he had gone through. But the fact that the other Avengers stand there and they are in the room protecting themselves, you know, obviously, but they're not willing to just, you know, okay, you go in this blast behind these blast doors and we'll go stand in the observation deck or some shit. No, they're right in the room and they're making sure that they can rush to his aid the second that he needs it is really sweet. I
Oh
agree.
yeah, definitely. So I think you're on your last one. So what's that one?
I've got one left. How many you got left?
I have two of them left.
Okay, you go next then, because I only have the
All
one
right.
more and
So
I just went.
wait, you oh yeah. I'm okay. So I don't know why I thought I had gone. Next, I have Hulk smashing Harlem. I really enjoyed the fight between him and Abomination, and at the end of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, I agree. That shit is cool. And they do reference it very briefly in Luke Cage, but that was a fun time. That was Hulk done in a way that wasn't, because the Hulk, don't get me wrong, Ang Lee was awesome in 2003. Hulk had a lot of amazing things we'd never seen before, especially when it first came out. That was a big deal. But he didn't really have, like, absorbing man that they made out of his father, Nick Nolte. He didn't really make for a good Hulk fight. It was confusing. It was different, and it's something that I would have wanted him to maybe graduate to, but he needs another brawler to bite to fight against, and to see the Abomination in a creepy and, you know, gross and bony character design that they gave him was really cool. And we're not going to see that again with Abomination, but it was cool that we saw it in the moment. That was a really good fight.
So what's your last one?
My last one is the silent farewell moment in the Quinjet at the end of Age of Ultron. I thought that was such a moving moment and a loss for the movie, because to me, call me hedonistic or sadistic or whatever you want, but I enjoy some sadness in my endings. And I think that, yes, they all saved the day, but at what cost? And there was so many positive things at the end of Age of Ultron, but this one big loss was that the Hulk looked at himself ever since that fight, or ever since that issue with Wanda getting inside his head, as a danger to everybody. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just Bruce, and he didn't even leave the idea up to Bruce. It was him turning the video off and going into silence mode and leaving Earth because he was so scared that anyone that he loved or people in general would look at him as a freak, as a monster. So I really enjoyed that for just his growth as a character. That was very bold of them. Mm-hmm.
Definitely it's really beautiful and sad seeing that and they made you wait for so many years to actually get the resolution on that.
Where she and him see each other again, you mean?
Well, no, I mean, so I mean, I mean, you, two, you but two years, 2 years between in Age of Ultron and Thor Ragnarok, and it True. Feels like a long time between those.
Yeah. Well, even the simple fact that they bring it up in Civil War when they're do you know where Hulk and Thor are? If I misplaced two, you know, whatever it is, 100-pound nukes or whatever, I can't remember the hell. But yeah, the fact that they draw attention to the fact, like, oh, what side would they be on, and where are they? Why aren't they here anymore? Mm-hmm. And then we finally are given some kind of I wouldn't say salvation, but this like long-awaited thirst quench of seeing them in Ragnarok together, and be like the two Avengers that have been absent for some time. That was cool.
My final line is one from the comics that I think is a really cool moment. Just a few years ago, it was an Immortal Hulk, great power, and it is when Banner does not remember but Hulk does as of Peter Parker, or as this was after. Spider-Man erased people's memories in the comics, and I think it was a great emotional scene for Peter finally having another person who can is able to know who he is and is able to share in the loneliness that he feels.
That's awesome. That's a great one. I didn't like it. Do you think that they're going to do that in the future?
So, okay. Have Hulk remember? I would love for that to happen. I don't think it can, because the only times that Peter has met Bruce S. Hulk was one in Infinity War, or maybe very briefly. I don't even know if he actually did get have a conversation. Did actually like
oh, see true. Him? When they're trying to, him. Yeah, when they
and then there's the funeral scene in Endgame, but again, that is Bruce's in Hulk's body, not Hulk. So I don't know if Hulk actually has met Peter, so I don't know if they could do that in the MCU.
It wouldn't have the emotional impact. Like, Peter's entire emotional impact is pretty much with Tony, and it's just it's a shame, because it would be cool. That's where we need to see him in the future, is interacting with more than just, yeah, he's got Stephen Strange, yeah, he's got, you know, he met the Guardians. I feel that's it.
I honestly like that's a big reason why I hate that we had that spell at the end of No Way Home, is what relationships he did have just been erased now, and makes it feel like it's less likely to see him cross over with any other Avengers and just hanging out with them and fighting villains with them. And that's what I want out of Spider-Man and the MCU. I want to be able to see like an actual team up film between him and Hulk but I don't know if now with the with that memory erased thing, if they would go with that, because I think they're going to want to just have him lonely for a while now.
Yeah, and they might, and I'd be happy to see the solo Spider-Man stuff as long as they do it well. What bugs me is the fact that so many people online are like, oh, we have to outdo what we've done with Spider-Man in the past. He has to be dealing with these great, huge bad guys. And it's like, okay, well, but if they're Avengers level threats, they're going to be considered as such. And you're going to have all these questions of why the hell didn't more people step in and help. And it's like, if you just ground the story a little bit more, make it more about the character and an issue that he's dealing with one villain, and why it might be a little bit more important than inviting all these other superheroes to come help. It's like, that's the Spider-Man that I would like to see for a little bit. But yeah, some of the most successful runs of the Avengers comics are when Spider-Man, Wolverine, and the Beast is an Avenger, technically, in a lot of the comic book runs. So there's some great decades of comics that have people like She-Hulk, people like Beast, people like Wolverine, people like Spider-Man on the Avengers team instead of your classic, you know, Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, and who's the fourth one? Captain America. Yeah. Steve. Yeah. So I would agree with you. And also, if they do Spidey in the right way and not in the Sony way, they might get it right for a couple of movies before teaming up again.
But
fat chance.
It really annoyed me how for the previous trilogy, like they said when Spider-Man coming into the MCU that he would be having he would be teaming up with an Avenger each film, and then it was basically a cameo appearance in each film, and it wasn't actually him teaming up with them. It wasn't actually him getting to know them. I'm like, well, that's bullshit. Like, I've already seen in five different times of him being alone. I want to see him teaming up with other Avengers and have them be co-leads in the film.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those things where, like, big-time Spider-Man fans will look at him the same way that people look at Batman. It's like, is Batman Batman or is he one of the Justice League? And it's like, diehard fans might feel either way. There might be someone in each camp, but yeah, I personally was really enjoying him expanding his universe a little bit after five movies of just Spider-Man. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, why did the last ones fail so hard? It was like, because you put too many characters in it. Okay, well, it really depends on who is writing it, who is going to direct the next Spider-Man thing. And
oh yeah,
God, I hope they don't give it to Sony. That's all I'm worried about now, especially with Madam Web, and now how Kraven the Hunter is like my least exciting. I'm like the least excited for Kraven the Hunter. I mean, any Sony movie. I just found out what the new Venom movie is going to be called. I could give a shit at this point what the new Venom movie is called.
You know, speaking of Kraven the Hunter, though, something I think is so interesting to me with this year is so in the past it has been so hard to get R-rated comic book films. This year, between Kraven the Hunter, Deadpool 3, and Joker Father of Doom, there's going to be three R-rated films this year for comic book films, which is baffling and also kind of cool to see.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, there's a market for both. And I think people forget that. They forget the success of something like the first trilogy of Blade movies. Like, those movies were more fun because you made them more violent. You made them more for adults. They weren't just for kids. And that's not every superhero movie has to be geared towards children. The ones that are geared towards them, the Young Avengers ideas they have coming out, should be for kids 100%, and make them for adults too, make them for a family-friendly audience 100%. But those fans out there that grew up with the comics and now they just want to see their favorite violent comic book characters be on screen accurately, like, if there's a Midnight Suns movie coming out, make it rated R, see how that does, because it will explore things like demons, multiple personality issues, vampires, like many things like that can be explored more in more creative ways. Like, even just the character of Black Knight, He has a sword that wants him to kill. It gives him all his power, but he himself does not want to kill people. So why wouldn't that be more fun to explore in a R-rated setting? Kids don't need to see that movie. It's not for them. It's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Aww. But now, last thing I would like to bring up before I end this off is just how much I appreciate both Mark Ruffalo and Tatiana Maslany, because there is a genocide happening right now out to the Palestinian people, and both Mark Ruffalo and Tatiana Maslany have been using their platforms so much to be able to try and help help, and I think it's beautiful to see celebrities being willing to risk their careers on the fact on trying to help stop human lives from being killed.
Yeah, I mean, people want a peaceful resolution, and so many people have just looked at the Palestine-Israeli conflict as completely unsolvable, and that's bullshit. It doesn't need to be that way. People don't need to look at it that way.
It would be picking sides, pick peace. It would be very easy to solve it by simply, Biden, stop sending Israel money to have weapons to keep bombing them.
Big time.
But I just want to say I appreciate so much that both our Hulk and our She-Hulk actors have been such a powerful presence for good. It really shows that they are superheroes in real life.
Yes, 100%. And it's both Hulks standing up for the little guy. And if you don't think they're the little guy, if you don't think that the innocent people of Palestine are the little guy, look into what is being thrown at them in response from Israel. You're crazy if you've not looked it up. You're crazy if you've looked it up and you still don't get it.
Yeah.
Haven't looked it up, I give you a week to look it up. Just look it up and see exactly what has been thrown back at Palestinians, innocent Palestinians.
It's crazy. All right. So is there any final thing you'd like to say before I end off this episode?
Simply thank you for having me on so much in this 100 episodes. I feel like I'm probably on a lot of them. I appreciate not only the platform to speak my mind and talk about superheroes, but the way that you've gotten me into the Hulk more than I ever was means a lot. And I think it's an awesome character now that I never considered as a child. So I appreciate it.
And thank you for being willing to come on so much, and how much you've been and so helpful to me both on the podcast and outside of it. It's been amazing, and again, thank you to everyone who's listened and listened and joined me for different episodes. I appreciate all of you. It's been a great journey, and I could not be happier about it. Right.
What is it? Media Fan 50, Lindsay, Zigglerverse, Whitney, Reds Are on Fire, Isaiah, Nico, Jared, Clayton. It was very awesome hearing all your
thoughts. Definitely.
I hope I didn't miss anybody.
Hey, you all for putting in thoughts. It was great to be able to read or listen off to you guys' thoughts and here's to another 100 episodes.
Yeah.
All right. So
we gotta get to those Hulk movies. We gotta get to those made for TV movies, man. I'm interested.
If you like this Yama analysis, please give a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or a 5-star rating on Spotify. And I'd love your thoughts on the episodes. Please let me know. And if you'd like to listen more from me, please subscribe. Many more Yama analysis from me coming, so keep on the lookout. This again is your host, Smash Trey John, signing off.